time is really like a huge asset for us young people and for people who don't come from money. So sure, we might not start off with a trust fund or with winning the lottery, but we start off with time. And with investing, time can really help us turn like that small monthly contribution into something as large as $1 million.
Are you raising your family while also feeling like you're still growing up yourself? Do you wonder if you are getting it right? Welcome to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. She's a pediatrician and a mom, and she helps the whole family.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sarah Adams, a board-certified pediatrician, but I'm not your pediatrician. Feel free to use my podcast as helpful information, but in no way do I intend my podcast to replace the advice of your physician. Your physician knows you and is in the best position to provide medical advice.
Welcome back to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah, where we talk about the real questions that come up as we grow, and that includes financially. Today's episode is shaped by real calling questions from listeners across generations, all trying to make sense of money in a way that reflects both their realities and their values. In today's conversation, our personal finance expert will help us unpack your questions from starting out to planning for the future and show us how to create a financial life where you truly feel like you have enough. I'm joined by personal finance influencer Maria Melchor, founder of First Gen Living, who has helped thousands of people, especially those who didn't grow up with financial guidance. She helps them build confidence and clarity around their money. Maria, I'm so glad you're here.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Dr. Sarah.
Maria, before we dive into listener questions, I'm wondering, what do you think is the biggest financial misconception people have right now, especially across different generations?
So I would say that if you're 25, you are definitely not too late. And believe it or not, I do come across followers, clients who are still in their 20s and thinking that they are behind, you know, they preface what they're going to tell me by saying, like, I know that I am not doing enough, or I know that I am spending too much. I know that I'm doing this and this. And really, like, it's definitely not too late. That's why you're here. I'm so glad you're here. You're interested in talking about this. And then even if you're 55, talking about, like, in my case, a lot of my client parents, absolutely not too late. Hopefully you will live a long and healthy life. And even changing something for this coming week, for this coming year, for this coming decade is going to be huge for you.
And what I hear you saying is that people are anxious about money. Why do you think money anxiety feels so intense in 2026? Even for people who are technically doing okay, everyone's situation is different.
Right. I mean, I think for people who don't come from money, especially who've experienced financial hardship growing up, when they were younger, you know, money anxiety is always there. It's something that might have started in our past or even only happened in our past, but it just stays with us. So that's like something to keep in mind, is that if you struggled with money in the past, it's something that will continue showing up and that will get better over time, but will still be there. And then more generally speaking, this really applies to everyone. Like in 2026, we are seeing our most basic staples getting impacted by inflation. So even if we have a stable job or savings, even investments, we're going into the grocery store, the gas station, and we're seeing that instability, that volatility, right? So we're having to balance that, having to balance some stability with some instability. And of course, it's going to cause money anxiety.
I really appreciate you naming it and acknowledging that sometimes our anxiety starts early. And even though we are doing better, and I think that people will feel better about themselves when they just hear that piece of it. So let's get started with the questions that we have today. Let's start with the youngest generation grappling with their finances. You talked about those 20-year-olds feeling already behind. I want to talk about some financial planning for Gen Z. Saving money and investment planning can start small, but as you mentioned, ideally early, although it's never too late. So we're going to start with a question from Morgan in West Virginia.
Hi, my name is Morgan. I'm 27 years old, and I'm calling from West Virginia. I graduated from college in 2021, and I've been working in the sports medicine industry. Here's my question. Should I pay off my student loans and credit cards first or invest?
That is a great question for Morgan. It is one of the questions that I get the most from young people. I feel like we are, you know, in school and then we're just thrown into adulthood with maybe a checking account, often student loan, often a credit card that we don't really remember how we got or really know how to manage yet. And so we're thinking about, okay, I have all of these different things to juggle. What do I start off with? So what I would say to Morgan is to start by looking at your credit cards. So when it comes to your finances, credit cards can be something that helps you build credit. They can be something that helps you build rewards, you know, get those free flights now and then. But it can also become a 5-alarm fire very quickly if you start accruing a balance, if you're not able to pay off your balance in full every month. So I would start there, see if you do have a balance that you've been carrying month to month. And it's likely going to have a high interest rate, which just means that you're going to be paying a pretty high interest fee on that balance every month. And so start off by decreasing and ideally getting rid of that balance. So by that, I mean just like not carrying it into the next month. And then you can move on to investing and paying back your student debt. So which is next? When it comes to investing and student loans, unfortunately, a lot of my generation and the generation that's younger than me, most of us have some student debt. And so we want to make sure that we are creating a debt repayment plan. We're like acknowledging like, okay, yeah, we have debt. Let's see how much we have. Let's see what kind of monthly payment we can afford. And then also starting to research investing either through your employer, if they offer a 401k or 403b, or on your own through something like an individual retirement account, an IRA, because we want to make sure that 20 years from now, you know, you're sitting there looking at your finances and we want to make sure you weren't just paying back your student debt and have zero in savings, zero in investments. We want to make sure that you are making your payments so that you're like staying out of trouble with the federal government, but also you are starting to build your own nest egg. And down the line, you can look back and say, okay, even if I do still have some student loans, I also have some of the good stuff, the savings and the investments.
Maria, how small is too small when it comes to investing?
I would say that to get started, there isn't such a thing as too small. I mean, you can start with as little as $1 a month. Nowadays, you don't need to be like a millionaire already to like hire a very expensive financial advisor to help you invest. No, you actually can just take your money, however much it is, $1, $100, and go to a trusted broker. Established investment firms that can help you get started with very little money. I would say maybe start with a little more than $1. So my recommendation is always to start with 1% of your current income. So let's say that you are earning $50,000 per year. 1% of that is just $42 per month. So you could be investing just $42 per month or $21 per paycheck if you get paid every 2 weeks. And investing even those $42 per month could turn to $200,000 by the time you're 65.
Wow.
And then if you're able to go up to investing 5% of your $50,000 salary, which is our example, that's about $209 per month. So about $105 per paycheck. And that could turn to almost $1 million by the time that you're 65.
That's impressive.
It's super impressive. When I first heard about like millionaires, I thought, whoa, like those people must have won the lottery or just are super famous, invented something like amazing for the, for society. But really, the truth is that in order to retire in modern day United States, in the modern day United States, you do have to have a chunky amount of savings, and it's actually not totally inaccessible to people like you and me, to someone like Morgan, who's still in her 20s and can start with $200 per month. Time is really like a huge asset for us young people and for people who don't come from money. So sure, we might not start off with a trust fund or with winning the lottery, but we start off with time. And with investing, time can really help us turn like that small monthly contribution into something as large as $1 million.
So I hear it's okay to start small. It's never too late. And if you can start early, what you have is that value of time that's going to help your money grow. So along those lines of starting small, here are our next questions from a Gen Z and a young millennial. We'll play them back to back for you, and then we'll talk about how to help these two young women.
Hi, my name's Isabel. I'm 31 years old and I live in Los Angeles, California. And my question is, I make a modest salary and don't take too much home at the end of the month. And I'm wondering how I can start investing for retirement with this small amount of money.
Hi, I'm Charlotte. I'm 27 and I'm living in Savannah, Georgia. And my question is, how can I budget when my income is unpredictable, like working in a gig economy and it's not keeping up with inflation?
Any advice for these two young women?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say to Isabel and Charlotte that this is another more common phenomena with our generation is having to piece together income and then right now have to also learn how to deal with inflation. So with Isabel, I believe that Isabel asked about starting small.
Yeah, and you talked a little bit about that already.
Yeah, so Isabel, I will tell you what I was saying earlier, which is that even starting with 1% of your income, your monthly income, or 1% of your paycheck, if you get paid every 2 weeks, that can not only go a long way over the course of many years, but it can help you learn how to build that habit of setting aside a small percentage of your paycheck for yourself, for your future self. So we, you know, as adults, we like get used to paying our rent, our phone bill, Netflix subscription, because we're told like, okay, pay $800, pay $30, pay $10. And so we get used to paying these bills that go toward our landlord, toward corporations. And we have to like teach ourselves how to create bills that pay our future selves, like in this case, maybe 1% of your income, which a $50,000 was $42 per month, right? So if we start telling ourselves, okay, I have a monthly future me bill of $42 per month, can I get used to, quote unquote, paying this bill? If I can, maybe over time, and I can increase it to 2%, 3%, 5%. And it's better to start when you're small, actually, when you can only do a little bit, because then like the stakes are lower and you can just get used to that process of investing a little bit. And then as your income grows, as you build this habit, you can upgrade or move on to a bigger monthly future me bill.
Yes, and what about that unpredictable income and trying to keep up with inflation?
Right. So that is a great question. And I would say that with unpredictable income, that's a separate question than inflation. We have a lot of freelancers, self-employed people. I would think about moving from like a month-to-month budget, or like thinking about your savings and investments on the month-to-month, and instead coming up with an annual goal. So instead of thinking, okay, can I save $42 every month? Thinking about, can I save $1,000 this year? And so that way, when you do have a big paycheck coming in, or when you are working more, you're in a season of the year where you're getting paid more, working more, that's when you can think about, okay, can I set aside some of this for savings? And then when it comes to keeping up with inflation, I think this is where it could be worth it to start seeing if there are other parts of your professional skills that you could test out monetizing. By that I mean, for example, I love graphic design. I had some experience with it in college, and that could be something that if I was thinking about, okay, my current primary job isn't really paying all the bills anymore, can I look into getting hired for my graphic design skills and bring in some additional income that way? And that can also just help you start thinking about what are other jobs out there for me, right? Instead of just looking at this job, like if I'm looking at the future, like what could be other jobs that are paid a little bit better that I can start transitioning toward?
Today's episode is brought to you by Adams, Goot & Associates. No matter where you are in life, true peace of mind starts with a clear, confident picture of your financial future. Adams, Goot & Associates takes a holistic approach, listening to your goals, educating you every step of the way, and building a personalized plan so you can worry less and live more. Because when your finances are in order, you can focus on what matters most. Visit adams-goot.com to start the conversation, and you'll find the address in the description box below. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because we have another listener who has a question very similar to what you've just addressed.
Hi, my name is Wesley from New York City, and I'm 22 years old. I graduated from college last year with a computer science degree and specialty in web applications. I'd like to know what the best side hustles are for me to boost my income.
Maria, let's talk about side hustles. You've already mentioned quite a bit, because for so many today, having one job is really not the norm anymore.
Right, absolutely. I would just build on that and say that, definitely start by testing different skills that you have and seeing if you can monetize them. And especially being a fresh grad, being 22 in New York, it's such a great time to experiment and to be thinking not just about, can this be a side hustle right now, but how do I feel about this type of work? and about potentially transitioning to this type of work for more full-time work. Another thing I want to emphasize here is that whether you're dealing with a side hustle or a primary job, you know, kind of that some of that stable job money can disappear if you don't invest and save some of it. And some of that like quick money, quote unquote, can stick around if you do save and invest it for the long term. So it really doesn't matter like where the money comes from, whether it's your primary job or your side hustle. What matters more is what you do with that money and that you're making sure that some of that money is being put toward your long-term wealth building goals.
Yeah, this is a lot for young people today. They really have to find that balance and discipline to save even when their income can be inconsistent. Which brings up a thought, Roth IRA versus 401k. If someone can only choose one to start, how should they decide?
I would say that if you have an employer who offers the benefit of a 401k or a 403b for my nonprofit employees, it's the same thing. For a 401k, 403b, if your employer offers that, that is like a super easy way to get started. So I would start there, especially if they offer a match, which just means that, say you contribute $100 toward your 401k, they would match with maybe $50 or up to $150. And you can find out how much they can match it by emailing your human resources department. And so I would start there. If you have access to a 401k and a match, that's where you start. But actually, many people don't have that benefit. They have employers who don't offer a 401k or 403b. And so in that case, you can start with a Roth IRA and it's easy to get started.
While we're still talking about young people, I do want to ask about student loans. How do you think they can balance getting their debt down? What's the best way to do that? Because some of them might also have some high interests, much like credit cards, and still build wealth.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think when it comes to balancing student loans, especially high interest student loans, and building wealth, again, the key is balance, as in not just focusing on one or the other. I do some financial coaching. I see a lot of my money coaching clients come in having either focused exclusively on paying back their debt or focused exclusively on saving. And they feel like they are not doing enough or they're behind. And it's because like part of feeling financially healthy, feeling like you are doing well financially, is making sure you're contributing to every part of your financial life. And so I can't emphasize enough that even just like starting with a little bit of investing, even if you have a higher interest student debt, it can help you just feel like, okay, I have this, I know how to do both. I know how to pay back my student loans. I'm acknowledging I have student loans. And I also am beginning to develop that habit of investing. I would say that if you are really committed on paying back your student loans within a specific amount of time, like maybe 5 years or 10 years, and you know, that is like a top goal of yours. Maybe you want to become a homeowner in your 30s or your 40s and you just like want to decrease how much debt you have. In that case, it is definitely worth looking into refinancing your loans.
Okay.
If you have high interest debt. So what refinancing means is that you take your current loan, you go to a lender, ideally like you shop around multiple lenders, and you say, hey, who wants to buy my debt? Who wants to like pay off my debt for me?
Interesting.
And instead, I owe you the money. I owe the new lender the money. And the goal with this refinancing research is that you trade it for like a lower interest rate. So if your current lender, makes the sense. Federal government or a private lender, is charging you 10% for your student loans, the goal by switching to a new lender, by refinancing, is that you get something lower, maybe 5%, 6%. But again, this is only if you are like super committed. It's not absolutely necessary. It's just an option for those people who like are super committed to paying off their debt.
This is such great advice. I want to shift now to a phase of life that so many millennials are in the midst of, having a family. And the next question actually comes from our very own show producer, Alice.
Hi, I'm Alice. I am a producer on Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. I'm based in Portland, Oregon, and I'm 30 years old. And I'm wondering how I can prepare financially for having kids in the next maybe 2 to 4 years or so.
I love this question because it's not about panic. It's about intention. For someone like Alice, who's thinking a few years ahead, what are the smartest financial moves to make before kids enter this picture?
I love that question, Alice. I am in my 30s, and it seems like all of my friends are thinking about this now.
Mm-hmm.
So, when it comes to getting married, when it comes to starting a family, I like to break up financial planning into like 3 different categories. So the first category is short-term savings goals.
Okay.
So how can you prepare for this next phase of your life? How can you prepare for those one-time expenses? So maybe like furnishing a room for the baby, or I'm buying a bigger car. Those would be like short-term savings goals. So that's one thing to start thinking about. The other category is income goals. So there are things like childcare that we can't quite prepare for by just like saving up to pay for childcare for, I don't know, 10 years. So instead, we want to think about how much money would we need every month to afford this ongoing monthly expense. So if right now I live on $3,000 per month with my spouse, then and that is covering our current living expenses. Well, what if we add childcare to that? Would we need an additional $1,000 per month, an additional $500 per month? What would that look like as far as like, can we get our income to increase by that amount? So that's the other category, is thinking about a goal for your income, how it could grow to make you more comfortable. Of course, if you can't get a higher income, then you might have to start thinking about decreasing your expenses. So what could I give up? Maybe I spend $500 per month on traveling. Could I give that up so that I can afford to add childcare into the budget? And then the last category to think about, it's really a bonus category. It's long-term investing for your child or for that next phase of your life. And when it comes to children, it would be like investing for their college education. So if you have the bandwidth to even be thinking about something beyond those short-term goals, beyond those income goals, go ahead and think about, can I start a 529 plan for them? And if so, like, is it okay to start small? Absolutely. Could I ask some of my family and friends to, instead of gifting me materials stuff for the baby, could I ask them to like donate to their 529 plan? So think of it as like 3 different buckets, and you don't have to you know, plan, you know, down to the T for each bucket, but just like to help you not get overwhelmed. Think, okay, is this a short-term savings goal? Is this more of an income goal? Or is this a long-term investing goal?
That's such a great way to frame it, those three buckets. It makes something that can be underestimated, but also really stressful, sound a little simpler and doable. Is there a right amount to have saved before you have a child, or is flexibility more important than like hitting a number? Is there a way that parents can stress test their current budget to see if they can absorb these new expenses?
I do think that flexibility is key here.
Okay.
I think focusing on just one number can, you know, really make you spiral because there are just so many potential costs, right? But if we think about how can I prepare for this next stage by looking at my current spending and saving habits and being open-minded about, hey, they could change temporarily while I am in this phase of my life. And so I would say that a way to kind of stress test your budget is by focusing on that income goal and just thinking about like the top expense, like what expense are you most worried about? Is it childcare? I think for most parents, it's childcare.
Yes.
So like what, maybe do a little bit of research, like what would that cost? What does that cost in your area? And if I just insert it into my monthly spending, what would that look like? And you can test it by like going a month, 2-3 months, and just putting aside that money and seeing what it does with your budget. And if it's not really working out, then being flexible and seeing where you can cut back or seeing if you can start thinking about finding a job that better supports you financially. So yeah, flexibility is key for sure.
And this is such an important topic because I've heard from young adults saying, well, I have certain benchmarks or I need to check certain boxes and have a good time to have kids. And sometimes that's a little harder to find. So this advice is so helpful. Now I want to talk about a stage in life where financial pressure really starts to stack up. For a lot of Gen X listeners, it's not about saving for retirement anymore, really. It's about juggling responsibility in every direction at once. The next question comes from Michelle.
Hi, my name is Michelle, and I'm 52 from the Los Angeles area. I'm helping take care of my parents, and I want to know how I myself can better manage my own long-term risks.
Yeah, this is actually not just a concern for people like Michelle who are maybe Gen X. It's also a concern for some of the people I work with who are younger and who are already thinking. I think I work with a lot of like very ambitious and like type A people because some of the people I work with are already thinking about how can I help my parents later? So I'm in my 20s, my 30s, and I have a sense that my parents aren't fully financially ready for retirement and, you know, long-term care. And so they're thinking, even before starting their own families, like, how am I going to balance all of this? So if you're already thinking about this, you're going to be fine. You are way ahead of the game. And if you're already finding yourself in this position of having to care for your children, your parents, I would say like, forget about kind of everything you have to juggle and just start with your own goals and your own needs.
If you're looking for more information or clarity as you're navigating today's topic, check out our description box below where we'll share resources to help guide you through these moments. And please like and share this episode with others so they can access this useful conversation as well. Also, subscribe to our YouTube channel so you can get those two new episodes each month.
I know it's a bit of a cliche, but I do believe that you should put your oxygen mask on before helping others. And when it comes to finances, that means starting with your own goals and your own needs. And we don't want you to end up in the same situation as maybe your parents right now, which is you have to like depend on other generations. It's totally like understandable to, you know, be interdependent with people. So to expect to give and take from your parents, your children, but it is a whole other thing to really like expect to depend on other generations. And so we want to make sure you start with like your own needs, your own goals, and then you can add in your dependents, whether it's children or parents, add in your dependents as joint goals. So what I mean by joint goals is I want you to communicate your intention to help, as well as like your, where you're at with how much you can help. And so instead of saying, you know, oh, I have to help my mom with this and that, think about it as I'm going to talk to my mom about how I don't want her to be on her own and how I want to create a joint goal with her of, maybe I can pitch in with this. Maybe we can tap into my brother or my dad-in-law for this. And so when we take it from like, it's on me to figure out what to do with my mom to it's on us to develop a joint plan. Even that just like really helps a lot. And I think it's also super important at this stage to learn how to let your loved ones have goals that are just theirs. So goals that are on them financially. So things that you can maybe help research, but that you aren't actually going to be financially responsible for. So when it comes to people who are taking care of their parents, one huge thing is to just look into like agencies on aging in your area. So can you just Google, like, if I live in New York City, New York City Agency on Aging, what are some resources that I can connect my parents with and, you know, maybe, like, help them navigate, but that are ultimately going to fall on them?
Where do you think long-term care insurance fits into this stage of life, this very difficult sandwich generation we're talking about? Where they're balancing their taking care of their kids and their parents.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so many expenses we can afford on the month to month. And so I would just take it back to like starting with your needs and your goals and seeing, you know, what are the priorities, right? And so people are really afraid of budgeting and sitting down with their financial numbers. And I get that, but it's not like I expect you, it's not like anyone expects you to be budgeting and looking at your numbers every day. But just like once a year, especially maybe now around spring, around early summer, you just did your taxes, you had to confront some numbers of yours, sit down and just list out some of your financial obligations and responsibilities, and see if there's anything on there that is not aligning with your values. So maybe you are paying for a monthly subscription that you just like don't really care about, or you are paying for an insurance. You don't even know what it does. You haven't ever used it. You've never talked to your insurer about your benefits. Just see where you can eliminate something and then substitute in something else that might make you have more financial peace of mind. So if in this case, having insurance for long-term care is something that would just make you feel way better on the day-to-day, you feel like you're covered, how can we put that into the budget?
Yes, that's so important. And I really want to emphasize what you said about we don't want to make it something we have to really worry or stress about, but at least meeting with a financial advisor like yourself once a year or more if you need to just see where you can shift and balance. Well, we've talked about getting started, planning ahead.
I just want to say I am not a financial advisor. I'm a financial educator. So this is a great place to mention the differences. So
yes,
when it comes to
you.
When it comes to financial professionals, financial teachers, I am a financial educator, which means I can teach you about how you can manage your money. Whereas financial advisors can actually come in and say, let me manage your money for you. They are licensed to provide individualized advice that you can act on together. And that's not me. So I can show you how to budget, teach you about credit, and connect you to a licensed financial advisor. But financial advisors are absolutely important as well. And so what I do with my clients is kind of get them to start understanding finances. And then once their finances become more complicated, more complex, they just don't want to deal with them anymore, that is a great time to hire a financial advisor who will just take over for them.
I really appreciate you defining that for all of us, because the next question really highlights how complicated money can become in middle age, especially when education, parenting, and long-term planning all collide.
Hi, I'm Jocelyn. I'm 52 and a single mother with significant student loan debt. How can I find a way to build my savings with so many financial obligations?
That's a great question. You know, I think it comes back to your values and your goals, and can you find some time to sit down and just like list out those financial obligations with some of the financial wishes or financial goals that you are thinking that you're maybe like neglecting right now, and just see, can I decrease some of these obligations, even if it takes time and years? So here's where I want to say, it's so easy to get overwhelmed thinking about everything that you could be doing. And so instead of doing that, I want you to focus on just one thing, start small, right? And if, let's say that right now you do feel like you have too many financial obligations, how can you reduce or eliminate one in the next year? That is already a huge goal, right? But
yeah,
if you can do that, then next year you'll have freed up a little bit of money that you can now turn toward some of these financial goals that you feel you're not making progress in. So we want to start small, and we want to, when we're feeling overwhelmed, think about stretching out our progress over the long term. And so even if you're not in your 20s anymore, right, if you don't feel like you have enough money, then you still have to think about time as your biggest asset, and letting time do some of that work for you, letting time help you, you know, get rid of some of your issues, some of those obligations, and time give you and then have time to focusing on other things.
Yeah. And as we get closer to retirement, the questions start to shift from, am I saving enough, to when do I start using what I saved?
Hi, this is Garen. I'm 58 years old and I'm from LA. When is the best time to take Social Security?
Okay. So Garen, you know, I hope to be you one day, getting ready to retire and make this huge decision with your wife. Social Security income, you know, it's something that is a huge benefit of living in the U.S., but could definitely be better. And so what I would say is, especially right now during a time when there is so much financial anxiety and uncertainty, it might be worth it to wait as long as you can to start collecting Social Security income. And if you want to get a precise estimate of like what it would look like to start taking that income right now versus if you waited a few years, you can go on to the Social Security website and see your numbers. You can log in and see, okay, this is what I'm estimated to get paid now versus if I wait. And so that's one thing you can do. But also, this is a great time if you do have savings and investments in addition to Social Security. It's a great time to look into hiring a financial advisor or an accountant so that you can find out for sure. They can help you find out for sure if you have enough in your personal retirement savings to support you through around like 30 years is the amount of time that we use in like the financial services world. So you can DIY and just get a preview of your Social Security. But then I also think that this is a good time to look into a financial advisor.
This has all been such great information. In closing, if someone listening right now feels overwhelmed or financially behind, what's the first calm, practical step they should take each month?
I just want to remind people that money, finances are just one tool, one part of your life, and that there are other tools, other parts of your life that are just as important in helping you achieve these goals, like you know, because ultimately, right, your savings are savings to travel, to become a homeowner, to retire one day, no longer depend on a job. And so when we look at money as a tool to achieve these things, then we can also see that there are other ways to achieve these things. And so what I would tell that person, a practical step to take each month, is to map out every safety net you have in addition to like your cash savings or like your paycheck. So maybe you have a loved one who you can kind of give and take with as needed, or you do have some of that social safety net afforded to you through your government. Or maybe you have like a local community that you can exchange services with, barter with. You really want to step out of just seeing finances as a number that you have or don't have, and more as it's one tool and what are the other tools I have. So yeah, sit down. And this is something I force my readers to do in the book, is to map out just like every other thing besides money that they can lean on to get where they want to be.
Maria, I want to point out, like you so eloquently mentioned, that you're the author of the book, Always Have Enough, How to Build Wealth When You Don't Come from Money, where you share practical step-by-step approaches to creating financial stability. How can people find and follow you and learn more about your book and the work that you do?
Absolutely. I'm so proud of this book. It is the book that I wish I had, in the sense of like when I was freaking out about money the most, I wish there was somebody who was like, hey, it's going to be okay. And also here are other resources that can help your finances that might not have been obvious. And so you can buy my book starting September 1st. It comes to a bookstore near you on September 1st of 2026. And in the meantime, I love to have you on social media. My handle is First Gen Living. So like first generation living, First Gen Living. You can find me on Instagram, on TikTok, and you're always welcome to direct message me. And yeah, if I can, I like getting back to you and just hearing where you're at. So yeah.
Maria, thank you for sharing your wisdom today. And to everyone listening who sent in a question, thank you for trusting us with something so personal. These conversations matter, and I'm really grateful that we get to have them together. See you next time on Growing Up with Dr. Sarah, and let's grow up together.
Produced by Autovita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.